Conversations with Friends is a new series.
A series within a series.
Creative conversations between writer friends.
We were blown away by the calibre of the pitches we received from established mid-career debut and emerging writers.
From those writing poetry, fiction, non-fiction, plays, newsletters and PhDs.
Conversations to get you through these strange COVID days and beyond.
Sit back, stay home and enjoy. This episode of Conversations with Friends is with R.W.R. MacDonald and Catherine Kovacic. R.W.R. MacDonald is a Kiwi living in Melbourne with his two daughters and an extended rainbow family, including Harry Cat and Stevie Nicks the chicken. Rob attended Favour Academy's Writing a Novel Stage 1 and Stage 2. Rob realised while studying journalism that writing fiction, rather than reporting facts, was his true bent. The Nancys was highly commended for an unpublished manuscript in the 2017 Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. The Nancys was published in 2019 by Allen and Unwin.
Catherine Kovacic is a former vet. I was just sitting here, Catherine, working out how to say veterinarian. So I'm just going to say she's a former vet turned art historian who lives in Melbourne with two giant dogs. Her debut novel, The Portrait of Molly Dean, was shortlisted for the Ned Kelly Awards. Catherine's latest book, The Shifting Landscape, is the third book in the Alex Clayton art mystery series and was released on March 31st, which just happened to be like day one of isolation, COVID isolation in Australia. What a time, huh?
Interesting hearing about the experience of the book coming out. It's a snapshot moment in time that I hope is never repeated, but
I know.
It's pretty fascinating.
It really is. I thought that she, in that interview that we had with Chrissy Neen, and she talked about being lateral about with the pandemic, and I thought Catherine's was a really good example of how she's kind of worked laterally through this period of
the virtual book tour.
The virtual book tour, yeah. That, well, she couldn't do anything else. So frustrating.
I do like the eternal question from first-time novelist to someone doing it for the third time, whether submission and all the rest of it gets easier.
Yes.
And the answer's always no, isn't it?
It's you always never get, no.
That's right. No experienced, long-time, multi-book author is ever saying, actually,
nah,
the emotional side disappears.
Or maybe we just haven't spoken to those authors and they're somewhere out there and they're far too – they're just producing too many books for us to even speak to them. You know, the other thing I really liked on the pandemic stuff was Rob, you know, saying this is a pandemic, not a writing retreat, to his mates who were like, yeah, oh my gosh, you must be getting so much novel writing done, which we've talked about before as well, like that just the complete incapacity sometimes because of time and homeschooling, all the other stuff. And also just because, who did I hear talking about it the other day? And they were saying, you know, the idea of escaping into your novel, I think it was the guy who wrote Greenwood, Michael Christie, you know, like the idea of escaping into your novel because it's an interesting place to be away from the world to write. But when the world is proving to be kind of more ridiculously curious, interesting, terrifying every day, you don't want to escape into the world of your book because it's kind of more interesting, terrifying, scary being out here.
I think that's a really good point. These guys are also our first writers, I think, on this series that have written multiple books about the same characters or are writing.
Yes.
That's really interesting because there is a sense of loss when you finish a book that you've sort of farewell these people, but that's an opportunity to keep coming back and developing them. And
I'm very excited for a new Nancy's. That's feels like a lot of fun. I really liked also the conversation about editing and the circles of Dante's Hell, I think Catherine referred to, and the Irma Gold article, which we'll link to. And, of course, it made me remember, like, we've spoken to Irma and that conversation that we have with her in season one of the podcast about editing is terrific as well, if people want to go back to that to look at to look at.
It is a good one to go back to. Pretty poor sound quality. We were infancy in those days. That was our first time attempting to record at a mobile location.
And remember then we lost, we nearly lost one and we're on the phone back to our darling producers going, oh my gosh, we don't know how to make the laptop work and we think we just lost everything. Obviously, we're so amazing and professional now. You know that other thing, there's so many books, so little time conversation. Obviously, really, I really felt that part. I bought a lot of books in isolation. And, of course, we also get other ones sent to us from publishers, et cetera. And I wanted to know.
That is the best thing ever, isn't it? Don't you think? I will never get over that.
I will never get over it either.
Carry on.
I wanted to know what criteria do you work out what's on top of your to-be-read pile?
I don't know. I have a to-be-read pile there, and sometimes I think whatever I get gets initially put on top, but when I finish the book I'm reading, then you have to kind of
assess.
Look through. Mm. Yeah, I think most of the time I'm not looking for something too hard.
Yeah, okay, nice.
It's probably my first selection. I'm interested to hear your... I feel like you're going to have a more well thought out.
It is so not well thought out. Partly it's by, I just worked out, I think I'm doing, by way not of good planning, but poor planning, I'm doing 5 interviews next week, which means that there's quite a lot of books that very quickly need to be read for people that we're interviewing.
Because you want to read it pretty close too, you? That's the balance. You don't want to be...
And I have learnt that really well. I think that's one thing we're doing better, that you've got to actually time it to read it just there. Otherwise, there's too many books muddying the waters in between.
I agree.
You know, sometimes you feel like a crime. I've been doing my kind of non-fiction reading. I always have one fiction going at the same time, so that's been easy.
But, yeah, me too. Which is actually a good thing. Did you hear Catherine talking about, obviously you've listened to the episode, writing true crime after writing crime
fiction?
That's really fascinating discussion.
I sometimes feel like you might just pop on one day while we're talking and say you're about to write true crime. I feel like that's
I was about to say I would never. Of the things that Catherine because of the things she talks about in fiction, you have distance, but true crime, these are real people, real victims, real everything. I just am, no.
Wow. That's very interesting. What I do like, and I just jumped on to have a look at the actual course that these two are running, a Faber crime writing course coming up. And those Faber courses look amazing.
Phenomenal.
So
a woman
impressive.
In my that I was working with when I was working at council got I think they for Faber have like a scholarship person that does it each time because it's quite a fairly expensive course and she got the scholarship and
amazing.
So I had heard about that for a long time but she raved about it, said it was phenomenal.
Well, whether or not you can afford to, dear listeners, we encourage you to go and have a look at those at the Faber course that these two are running on crime writing and at the other courses because they look hot.
Hello.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, box of birds. halfway through 2020.
Yeah, so, that was a big cat person thing to say, I think. I'm as happy as a box of birds.
Yeah. Or as someone used to say, happy as a box of dead birds. But that's another story.
Oh, okay. That's between you and your therapist, I think.
Now, congratulations on The Shifting Landscape.
Thank you.
Your new book.
Thank you. It's been a bit weird because the reviews have all been really great, but as you know, launch date was basically lockdown day one. So sales have not been as brilliant as they could have been because I'm kind of disappointed also that the beautiful, beautiful cover that Nada Bakovic didn't get that nice shelf time, you know, when people could just come into a bookshop and see it and go, oh, that beautiful book. So it's been really weird. So, you know, virtual launch, virtual book tour. Boy, was that interesting.
Yeah. because this is your third book. So yeah, how different has it been? I mean, obviously not being able to go into the shops.
Yeah, it's, well, obviously we sort of had a calendar of events planned and, you know, they just fell like dominoes as things got worse in very crime writing fashion. Things have shifted. So I've done a few, you know, library events and things, and there's a few more coming up. But I think the virtual book tour was really interesting. So it was quite nice because some of the bookshops that stayed open, you know, the little guys, or were, you know, fulfilling orders rather, I guess I should say, you know, getting orders out to their local community. We got them on board and they sent me pictures either with my book in them or if not, I was allowed to Photoshop my book into it. And so I made this virtual book tour. Ooh. And we went kind of around parts of Australia and visited places and let people know that these shops were still delivering. So it was kind of a nice little community connection thing. It's like all that online stuff. You never know if you're kind of shouting into the void and just talking to people in your own little bubble. But it was nice too. So yeah.
So did you get to connect and meet booksellers that you hadn't before through that?
Yeah. So virtually, obviously. With sort of emails and a few calls and things, which was really nice. Places, you know, that you probably wouldn't make it to because they're, you know, in far-flung corners of other states. You know, so that was really good. Yeah.
Excellent. Because, I've certainly you know, not being waspy or as a backhanded compliment, but I have seen a lot of shifting landscape and perhaps more than I did painting shadows online, that is. So that's the flip side, isn't it?
That's right. We'll just sort of see how it goes. As I said, there's a few more events and things planned and hopefully as we come out of lockdown a little bit more, we'll be able to put it through. But, you know, it is what it is and it's first world problems really, isn't it?
With everything going on and absolutely.
And I think I have to flip congratulations back at you for Nancy's 2.0.
Thank you.
The hat and flang.
Excited about that. I've just waiting on the structural edit at the moment.
Okay.
And I saw Irma Gold. She's just written an article on her blog outlining the different editing stages, which was really fantastic. When we went into lockdown on submission. And so that was interesting doing that again. Because last time I was able to, I guess, write through it, but I just found it really tricky. I mean, the author of three books, does it actually get easier submission or?
So I'm just sitting here flicking my hair back from my shoulders right now and just. No, we're just when you were saying about Irma and the stages of editing, I was wondering, are the stages called trepidation, nausea, panic? Because I don't know. No, it's I think because I've been writing a series, the writing's gotten easier because the characters are in my head pretty consistently, which is a bit odd, but they're, you know, that I know them really well. So it's easier to write the characters, but also you've got to take them new places. And in terms of editing, no, I think there's always that that top of the roller coaster feel that you just it's the circles of Dante's hell, really, isn't it? Because you find things and you think, oh my goodness, thank goodness I found that, and then you think, but what haven't I found? If I found that, that was still lurking there, and three people have already looked at it, what else could be here? And you know, and then there's that fear that when you finally get your freshly minted book, in that little package that you're going to go through the pages, and the first page that it comes open to, there will just be this error in the middle of the page that's like looking at you like, you know, the big fat zit on a teenager's head that you can't not see it. And
and then it's frozen in time forever.
That's
so,
it. That's it.
Yeah. And I think with, you know, writing a series, and I was thinking about it with your books, you know, you really start to develop quite a deep affection for the characters, I think, because this is now you're following them and they're developing as characters and growing. And, I think there's something quite special about them.
I agree. And it's they're like friends. Sometimes they're really annoying friends, though. I mean, you find that when you're writing your guys, that they just do things that you don't expect them to do. And like, you're like, no, we're going to do this. We're always going to go that way. What are you doing?
And they I also, it also makes it harder when you have to put them through things, I find, the more you get to know them, particularly like for me with Tippi, like I just didn't want her to feel hurt or pain or anything, but they have to go through that.
She's only 11, you want to wrap her up in cotton wool, don't you, and just make them a happy place. And for me, I think that's John, you know, the hapless sidekick that people want his life to sort out. And of course, I'm getting more and more things about when are they going to get together? When is Alex and John? I think they've all got lots of baggage to sort out, and that's that's going to be a buzzkill if they actually get together, I'm afraid. So.
No, so unless don't I say
end
that.
The series, if I end the series, anything could happen.
So with launching, have you been able to do any writing?
I have been doing bits and pieces of writing. So I have an Alex and John number 4 in the works. So So I've been fine-tuning that, but the main one I've been working on is a true crime book, which has been a little bit of a different thing. So this is my pro tip for today, is if you're at an event with your publisher and it's late at night and they say, hey, I'm leaving now, do you want to catch the tram with me? You always say yes. Because I was on the tram with my publisher and she said, how would you feel about writing a true crime? And I sort of went, and so I've written a true crime, which is coming out in January next year.
Wow. You are a machine. That's amazing. So how was it? I mean, has there been something, I guess with Molly, you had, you had that true crime element. Is it something that you'd wanted to do, to give true crime a go? Or
I hadn't really thought about it, and this is a historic true crime, and I, like, hats off to the wonderful authors who write contemporary true crime, and because it's quite horrifying. I think when you're writing fiction, you've got that distance, and you're writing about fake people, but here, when you're looking at real people and their lives and the ripple effects on families and friends and neighbourhoods, it's really, it's really quite confronting and quite hard to read. So it's, it's also, I found that there were some things that, you sort of think, you've got to put it in for the sake of veracity, for the sake of the readers to see that story. But it's also actually, it's going to be hard for them to read as well, because, they're really quite tragic crimes. So it was a very different place to be in. And I found myself taking extra walks just to kind of clear my head. But it was also really interesting reading about police process and community, and I guess just the way thoughts around crime in the early 20th century too. So it was an interesting place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there, I think.
Absolutely. So and is it still kind of haunting you now, or have you been able to, I guess, make peace with having spent so much time
I've been doing edits. I think aspects of it are still really sitting with me, and I think it's more so the victims and their families. That's what's really been sitting with me, and that's how I sort of tried to frame the book too, so that's what people are going to take away from it and remember. And I think that's probably what actually helped me go into writing true crime, was that it's a forgotten crime, and I just think, you know, we need to remember some of these victims a little bit better than we do, and you know, it's hard. Absolutely. So many people know the names of people who are killers or murderers or locked up, you know, crime families and things, and we tend to forget the victims. So remembering the victims in this case, is, I think that's what really helped me writing it.
Yeah. And look, there's something you did so beautifully with Molly as well, is just bringing her back into people's minds. And, I still remember your story that you said when you first came across her, and she was just a small footnote. Changing the subject slightly, so have you written King Lear?
I've written a sequel, darling. From the Queen's perspective.
Yeah, it's good. We're not hearing that anymore, which is nice.
Wasn't that annoying? Wasn't that just so annoying? And, I mean, look, let's face it, we know Anne Hathaway had the kids, and she was probably in Stratford while he was in London, and he probably had the servants to do all the heavy lifting anyway.
Yeah.
And you know what? He'd probably actually three-quarters written it before the plague came to town. He's like, oh, yeah, I wrote it during the plague, when really all it was like dash off the end at the bottom of the book.
Yeah.
And then he'd play around, like, what were you doing? I don't know. Reading the comic strips, the comic strip equivalent of the time, you know.
Yeah.
Satirical letters and pamphlets.
I saw her on social, and I think it might have been Emma Viskids, but I'm not sure. It was a couple of weeks ago, saying, this is a pandemic, not a writing retreat. And I was just like, thank goodness, because I had so many people saying to me, non-writing friends.
Really?
Colleagues saying, oh, well, you must be getting a lot of writing done. And I was like, not learning from home with the kids, plus working in a non-relating job, plus everything going on. Both, you know, because life still happens. Like you've got the pandemic, you've got, you know, everything that's happening externally, but you still have that life thing that happened. People get sick, you know, family things. There's all kinds of things on top of, but probably exacerbated more so because of the pandemic and everything happening.
Well, I think come back there. You see, next time they sort of say, did you get plenty of writing done? You get, I don't know, did you and your partner get to work on your relationship issues when we're in lockdown? How's that?
So it's been kind of, for me anyway, with, writing's been sort of pretty sporadic. And the same with reading, unfortunately. I sort of went on a good roll, and then, dropped off. I mean, the last thing I read was Ashley Pelagian Blunt's How to Be Australian. And we did her launch a couple of weeks ago. Which was great. She had the Lone Pines Koala Sanctuary on Zoom. Yeah, it was so cool. And it was a bit of a fundraiser for that as well. And just, so much love on Zoom for her. And I think she's done such a great job with it. I mean, she's a Canadian who's now moved to Australia and has become an Australian citizen. But it's just her journey and trying to learn about this country. And she was so fearless in the way that she looked at it's very funny, but also, you know, she's looking at racism and you know, asylum seekers, wow, and you know, the history. Yeah, it was just it's such a great read, and it made
me on the list.
Yeah, no,
great.
Yeah, definitely do. I'm seeing, you know, reviews coming through from, you know, people born here who, mm-hmm. you know, have got, yeah, it's just been an interesting perspective, and they've sort of found out things about their country, and I guess to see it. I mean, I'm an expat, so I really related to it on that level. And it also made me feel incredibly lazy because she's done so much research. I guess now with you know, particularly with what's happened with Black Lives Matter and with what's happening for, you know, with the First Nations people raising, you know, these issues that have been around for since colonization, it's the time that we have to really double down on educating ourselves, if, you know, for us particularly.
Absolutely, yeah.
And non-Indigenous people, yeah.
It's, you know, I think one of the hardest things that for me has been looking at this and thinking, why are we still having to have these discussions? Why wasn't this, why hasn't this been sorted out so long ago? You know, it's just, it's hard to get your head around that fact that, you know, what's wrong with people is the bottom line, isn't it? It's just, I don't know. But that book's going on the pile. That's great. I've been doing reading. I was really excited because my library kind of, they've half reopened now. So,
cool.
Like, you book an appointment, and there's a person, you get your appointment, and they come and they temperature check your forehead and you sanitize your hands, and then you can collect.
Really?
Yeah, you can collect your books, or you can browse but not touch. And if you touch anything, you have to put it on the quarantine table, and they re-sanitize it before they put it back. But I had this stack of books that I'd requested like before we went into lockdown, and everything just ground to a halt. And so suddenly they're just like, please come and collect your 15 reservations. I'm like, okay, and I could not remember any of them, but they all sound really exciting. So my reading pile, which was already interesting and quite large, has just blown out exponentially, which is because I had some fun things on there, like, you know, serial murders and their victims was on the pile. But this other great book that a friend gave me called Semicolon, which is about punctuation and just geeking out, a bit like Lynn Truss's Eat Shoots and Leaves, but specifically focused on the semicolon for anyone who really wants to get there. But it's because, I mean, you'll appreciate this because you've been editing and I've been editing with the true crime. There are things like, you know, when semicolon in a statute in a state in America meant that someone got the death sentence instead of life in prison because of, you know, and they literally basically appeal on should it have been a comma instead of a semicolon. I know. How cool is what? Not cool for the guy. but you get what I'm saying. If you want to geek out about punctuation, it was quite exciting. And then I came to this lovely bit with Raymond Chandler, you know, the who wrote The Big Sleep and those wonderful sort of noirish crime books, the sort of letters he'd written to his editors when he felt they were correcting his punctuation too much. Which I've got it here. Can I read you a little bit? Because it was just really
cool. Yeah, please.
Let's see. Would you convey my compliments to the purist who reads your proofs and tell him or her that I write in a sort of broken down patois, which is something like the way a Swiss waiter talks, and that when I split an infinitive, God damn it, I split it so it will stay split, and when I interrupt the velvety smoothness of my more or less literate syntax with a few sudden words of barroom vernacular, this is done with the eyes wide open and the mind relaxed but attentive. And then it goes on. So I just thought, yeah, I'm feeling it. I could just, And because he was like a crusty old bloke, you know, in a tweed jacket with a pipe, you know, perpetually in the corner of his mouth, you can just kind of picture him sitting at one of those Corona or Remington typewriters bashing that out really hard. okay, punctuation. So that's been a really nice read, actually. I've been enjoying it.
Excellent. And what have you got on your, what's sort of next up or the next sort of two that you've got to go?
I've got The Devil Inside by D.L. Hicks, which is Pantera Press, a new one. So
Murder
in a Coastal Town, and the dead woman turns up with a piece of scripture held tightly in her hand. So, wow. Yeah, so that sounds interesting. But The Salt Madonna was one that I just finished reading, and that was a beautiful read, just a really, really nice lyrical piece of writing, Australian author. So
yeah,
that's definitely worth reading. But so many books, so little time.
Oh, for sure. I've got Kokomo, Victoria mm-hmm. Hannon.
Yep.
So she won the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards last year for unpublished manuscript. And also one which has just come through, which is it's short stories. It's called After Australia. So, which sounds great. It's edited by Michael Muhammad Ahmed. Mm-hmm. And it's from the blurb, 12 of Australia's most daring Indigenous writers and writers of colour offer a glimpse of Australia as we head towards the year 2050. Mm. So very excited to dig into that.
Please.
Yeah. So I read Claire Coleman, I read her mm-hmm. her story last night, and it's still sort of resonating in my mind. So yeah, very timely and.
And so how are you feeling about the writing now? You know, it wasn't sort of happening during the height of lockdown. Now, I guess now you're kind of into editing, right? So you're looking more at...
Well, no, so I'm still, I'm currently waiting on the structural.
Okay.
So this, so short answer is I haven't actually written for the last 6 weeks, which is quite a long time, and that's due to quite a few circumstances that are happening.
But you're not however, like an Agatha Christie and just building up the entire complicated thing in your head, and then you're just going
to. Well, I'm trying to. So the idea is I want to start plotting. Like, I know what happens for book three. So mm-hmm. the Nancy's being a trilogy. So I need to start plotting that out into more detail,
okay.
particularly because I'll be doing the structural edit for book two. So I want to make sure if there are any tweaks or changes that is required in book two for book three to have the resolution that I want. Mm-hmm. This the timing is right now to do that. So I want to do that. The pandemic's been interesting because I was writing, sort of working on a standalone.
When it
hit, and then I put that aside, and then I found it really hard to write. And then I had a dream, and I woke up and I had this whole other standalone, which has never happened to me before. So I plotted that all out and I started working on that. So I've got that sort of ticking away at the same time.
Oh, nice feeling.
So I kind of just want to sort of go into parallel universes and work on all of them at the same time, but I'm going to have to make a choice to just work on one. I don't think... I mean, have you ever split and wrote different projects at, within the same sort of time frame? Or?
No. I mean, editing one and writing another is as close as it's gotten, and that sort of felt too awkward. You know, you really like to have that headspace, don't you, and just be with that lot of characters and following that story.
Yes.
Because
I'm worried, I mean, as much as I want to, I'm worried about voice as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Sort of contaminating, one or the other or both.
I was playing around with the standalone, and I put that aside while I got back in and tidied up and finished this fourth Alex Clayton one, because the voice was very different and the style was quite different, and I needed to be with Alex and John and those guys and hang out in that little universe. And it didn't work to have the other one, even though, so I was having ideas and I just had to go and drop a sentence into my notes and go, we'll get back to that later, even though, you know how you get that little itch. Oh, I just write that paragraph. I just got to write. But put it aside. Put it aside. Take it off. Shake it off. Yeah.
So the standalone, will you start working on that soon?
I'm doing the final edits on the true crime now, and we're looking at the placement of line breaks, which is so getting a little bit excitingly anal about the whole thing, but in a good way.
Formatting.
Formatting, change the lighting. But so that's just sort of closing down now. So because we're at that really final edit, I'm able to kind of let my brain stick away in the background with things that I want to write and do with the other one. So that's just starting to bubble to the surface again. And interestingly, I have to say, I shouldn't be touching wood here, but pandemic feels like it's, I think I got a lot out of psychologically about watching people during this pandemic. And so I think this is going to infuse a couple of the characters in this new book, because new manuscript, let's not get ahead of ourselves here, the new manuscript one, because it's just watching the fear with people initially and the panic and what that did to people and the way people reacted and broke down, you know, in quite startling ways, you know, brawls in the supermarket and things like that. And now coming out the other side of it, as people are starting to get more edgy and they want to get out, and, you know, and so seeing that psychology and the psychology of the way people interacted in the street, you know, that where before, you know, they'd be hugging and touching, or, you know, you'd take the change from the grocer or whatever. And now there's this weird, you know, everyone's like, keep away from me, you know, stand over there. And, you know, someone walks behind you and you think, oh, that was a bit close. That was a bit close. And they just walk past you in the supermarket. But, you know, suddenly there's this whole, you know, a whole different feeling. And so I think psychologically that's been really interesting. And I think that's going to certainly colour at least one of the characters. Yeah. So I'm drumming my fingers together here. So that's...
Well, and absolutely seeing that... that sort of split in human nature where you had, you know, quite extremes on display. You had people, you know, obviously going out of their way, making sure that their neighbours and elderly people and, you know, those sort of vulnerable groups were taken care of. Mm. And then on the other extreme, you had those toilet paper wars. And yes, and like you say, that sort of panic that then kind of eased as people went through. I saw Christopher Vogler. I got a email today. I'm on his, the distribution list. And it was around, he's looking at the hero's journey through the pandemic, through actual real life. Ooh. So I'm going to check that out, see how that pans out. But it'll be interesting, purely that human nature aspect of what we've seen. And it's still, and this is the thing, I mean, it's still going. It's not over. Yeah. It's like, I think it sort of feels like a lot of people just feel like it is over because we're done with it. We get to choose that. So I guess the other thing we've been working on, which happened, is the crime course. So Crime Lab.
Yes. Faber Academy. So, how exciting.
Yes. So our old Faber Academy,
Isn't it? I mean, it's so nostalgic.
It is. So, that was fantastic to get to put something together like that. So I think that's sort of part of my writing space is
material for course material for our teaching of the Faber Crime Writing Lab.
Excited that we're going to have Craig Sisterson and Sarah Bailey and Chris Hammer.
Contacts. You're just like rubbing shoulders with the labs.
I'm really excited to hear what they have to say. I just think it's a bonus.
It's actually been interesting preparing material to teach that course because it's made me think about the way I write too. You know, a lot of it, it's just kind of bubbling away in the background, but when you actually have to sort of put it out there so you can tell someone else about it, it's like, oh, yeah, I do kind of do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's what I'm seeing it as really valuable exercise just to deep dive into all of those different elements and try and find some more readings around, the debate around, well, it shouldn't really be a debate, but, you know, around victims and these in crime novels and the way that they're portrayed.
That
sort of movement away from objectifying basically women as these, you know, goddess dead body kind of thing.
I think I told you, you know, we first started doing our Faber course and I was writing the portrait of Molly Dean, and that was my whole sort of background for her was that I didn't want her story to be girl gets murdered, and that I wanted her to be a presence and a character and have life on the page rather than, as you say, just being the dead corpse in the corner and then the police move in and that's where the story goes. So, yeah, I think that's really interesting. And sort of I've actually one of the books that I've been reading because of the true crime is like the fifth edition of an actual sort of, you know, it's a manual text, you know, for FBI police in America and what have you, called Serial Murderers and Their Victims. And it's a, you know, it's a breakdown of how, you know, in terms of solving a crime and investigating a crime, there is an interplay between murder and victim. And that's actually been really eye-opening too, just from that investigative perspective. Again, looking, and it's much more about looking into the lives of the victims and, you know, again, rather than just what was the motivation of the murderer to kill this person, you know, what brought that victim to this point, to this place, you know. And so it's really been quite interesting, you know, kind of horrible way.
So is it charting, you know, the victim's life leading up to? Work that out with the murderer? Yeah.
Yeah, all aspects. Every aspect of their life, but just also the interaction of, you know, what was that first point of contact between the two of them, you know?
Right.
Was it a random thing, or is it, you know, something that they've been crossing paths, you know, for months, years, whatever. Patterns, you know, a real deep dive into that sort of thing. So, right down to the nitty gritty of just who the person was. So,
yeah, which is, I mean, yeah, well, I'm glad to, well, glad's not the right word, but you know what I mean? That the focus is more and more, as it should be, on the victims rather than glorifying these monsters.
That's it.
I'm looking forward to our class discussions around these kind of things and doing a bit of and to hear what other writers have to say around.
And I think that's it. You know, it's always great to hear what other writers have to say, and I think that's what you get. Mm. What you always get so much out of that, you know. Unless maybe you're, I don't know, Hilary Mantel or someone who's like just right up there who doesn't really, well, maybe they're interested, but maybe not so much. I don't know. But I always like to hear what other writers have to say because I always learn something from other writers. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So was that a burn for Hilary Mantel?
No.
No, that's great.
I mean, I look full power to Hilary Mantel and those exalted authors who, you know, are always at the top of the mountain that we all hope to climb, you know, that you could get that position where, you know, you could just flick people on the forehead if you wanted to and get them out of your way. I don't know.
Or to that position where you decide you don't need any editorial advice. Yeah.
Oh, look, that's a whole other discussion. You are
why would you like reject? I just don't know. Honestly, I find it bizarre. Wouldn't you want like it's such an integral part, and it brings, you know, a book's not a book without it. So
unless the editors get scared, I don't know, you know, maybe if you're one of those top echelon kind of authors and the publishing house says, here, you edit X's work and you're thinking, my job, his, the money he brings to the company. Yeah, let's see here. This manuscript looks perfect to me.
Oh dear!
I like editing. Dear. I like nitpicking and.
Oh, it's such an absolute privilege to have someone spend that much time on your work, and you know, that loves that story and is wanting to see the best for it. Is oh my god, it's amazing.
That's it. And I mean, I think we're both the same. When you're with your characters, you get so much into that headspace that, you know, like it makes sense in my head. But maybe I've had lots of extra conversations with the characters that haven't made it to the page. So maybe it's not going to make sense to the reader because, you know, she didn't know that little sidebar that Alex and I had back there. And, oh, yeah, I need to put something in about that. Right. So
absolutely.
We've been talking a lot, haven't we?
Oh, it's been lovely, lovely catching up.
Oh, it's going to be really nice when we can, like, catch up too. But this is really good. Yes. This is nice. Yeah. This is nice because, you know, we always have plenty to talk about.
Yes. Yes. Tip of the iceberg.
That's it.
Well, and I guess, we'll have to keep talking.
Yeah. I better get back to my line breaks, I suppose. Line breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yes, please do.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons. This series is supported by the City of Melbourne through a COVID-19 arts grant.